Hey, greetings, everyone. I am Dr. Tommy Watson, and welcome to another episode of Resilient Stories Podcast, where we share the grit and glory behind the stories of amazing like people like you who have bounced back from adversity and failure to go and live their lives on purpose. Today's show is being sponsored by Million Dollar Business Pathway, where we believe everyone has a story to tell and to sell. You want to learn how to tell and tell your story? Sell and tell your story? Go to tawatson.com under the programs and product page and click on a Million Dollar Business Pathway to get yourself started. So, folks, are you guys ready for another amazing show today? Joining me, I have the one and only Mr. David Richmond.
Wow, even got a room full of applause. Thank you, Dr. Watson. How are you?
Mr. Iron Man himself, man. It is a pleasure to have you on. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing really good. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. It's great to have you on. Hey, so David, so for the folks who may not necessarily know who you are, can you briefly just share who you are and where they can find you or follow you at?
Yeah, sure. So I'm an author. Came out with a couple of books. Prior to that, I was in the financial services business. I worked for a major Wall Street firm and used to write. I managed advisors, but I used to write, a lot in the industry. But two books for the public, and more to come, hopefully. And you can find out anything about me from my website, cycleoflives.org. cycleoflives.org. So I do public speaking. I teach expressive writing workshops, teaching people how to get in touch with their feelings. And I also do quite a bit of endurance athletics.
That is absolutely awesome. So folks, definitely reach out to David. Follow him. Great guy. Bring him in. You look for speakers. You're going to love his story. And he's definitely a person who can tell you about overcoming obstacles and dealing with his emotions and being successful today. So David, as you know, our podcast really centers on bringing amazing people like yourself on and having you kind of talk us through, some of the most grueling and challenging times in your life. And I really appreciate your willingness to come on and do that today. So let's start off by that first question. Talk to us about one of the biggest obstacles you faced in your life here.
Yeah, sure. And we were talking before, and it's funny because, you could walk by somebody's office and look in and go, oh man, is that person successful? Or, you could see them driving down the street going, man, that person never had a care in the world. And you have no idea what they've been through.
Absolutely.
Like no idea. And, it's strange. So my kind of my first low point of realizing like, oh my gosh, I'm alone in this world and I got to figure stuff out was I was 18. I left a home that was not a fun place to be for my childhood, and therefore had nobody call when I left. Maybe a couple of friends I could have, but I was too embarrassed. Once a couple of days later, my car broke down and I asked for help. And the person that asked for help helped me by putting a gun in my face and telling me, give me all your stuff and get the hell out of here.
Wow.
And so 3 days into my journey into the world, I'm living in my car behind a supermarket with a carton of cigarettes and 56 cents in my pocket going, what the heck am I going to do? Right. And I was 18, but I might've been 11, emotionally or world wise, maybe 10. I mean, I just didn't know anything. So I just had to figure it out. And along the way, I made some good decisions, but I also made a lot of bad decisions too.
Right. Wow. That's critical, Dave, because we have a lot of people out there who are parents. We have some young people out there as well. And all of us, are always striving to become more independent. And you jump out there, you try to open up yourself up to trust in another individual, and they take advantage of you and you find yourself in a homeless situation, though. Talk to us about some of the feelings again, because, one of the things we're talking about heavily in our society right now is being vulnerable to other people helping you out. You were vulnerable and someone took advantage of that situation that you were in. Talk to us about the emotions that kind of come in with that when you put yourself out there and then, it didn't work out.
Yeah. And so I think I was only a little bit prepared for this, Doc, because I could never predict what was going to happen at home, right? I could come home one day and all the circumstances would be exactly laid out ABC. And I would get my ass whooped. Okay. Uh-huh. And then I could come home the next day and the circumstances were laid out exactly the same ABC and I could get praised. Uh-huh. Like it was, you didn't know what to expect. So I guess I, you know, when that happened, part of me was like, well, okay, this is the worst thing that could ever happen in my life. But you know what? I mean, what are you going to do? You got to move on till tomorrow, because it could not be the worst thing that ever happened. I mean, you know, so in one sense, I kind of was like, all right, I can handle rough stuff. But at the other hand, I was like, I don't even know what to do. I mean, but I never had anybody to turn to anyway. And and when I was growing up, I couldn't turn to anyone. I mean, I have maybe I have my sister, which we'll get to in a little bit. But you know, it's not the same living in your car, being homeless with no money, and being at home and not having anybody to turn to because things are rough there. They're different, but they're a little bit the same. Yeah. And so what I learned to do was to say, okay, I better figure out how to get out of a hole.
Right.
And I'm not saying every hole I got into was created by someone else. Sometimes the holes were by me, but I think I was raised, or my circumstances being raised taught me that I needed to learn myself how to get out of holes myself.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and so that was the feeling behind it, was somewhat like, all right, this is the way it's going to be. Like, it doesn't make any sense at all. Like, I can't make any sense of it, but I better figure out how to fix it, because I got to move on to the next day. I got to figure out what the heck's, you know, going to happen.
Right. And you know what, that's very, very important. And I appreciate you sharing that, because again, it becomes a piece where you have to try to strive to get yourself to a place that's better though. You mentioned your sister now. Now you're dealing with a sister who's dealing with cancer, and it doesn't matter how much you try to do, you can't necessarily change her situation. I was in a situation like that with my sister as well. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about what you felt, and we'll talk to us a little bit about what your sister faced, and then how you had to deal with it. Because again, it didn't matter how much you wanted to will yourself to see her better, there wasn't a lot you can do to change the situation. So how did you deal with that?
Yeah, let me fill in the gap a little bit between, you know, that living in my car and finding out my sister had terminal cancer was, I had two things going on. I had, on one side of the coin, I got really good at digging myself out of a hole, and I keep my head down and I just plow through, and every obstacle became just something I had to get through and get over. So when it came to my work life, you know, even though my circumstances didn't allow me to go to college, I found myself working for a major Wall Street firm running a business that had $120 million in revenue. And so, you know, if anybody had ever asked for my resume, I would have never got a job, right? I just happened to get the job and do good and figure it out. And, you know, I could dig myself out of those kind of holes really good. But on the other side, I wasn't real good at relationships. I didn't understand anything about self-care, self-awareness, like you talk about in your intro, living on purpose. I didn't understand any of that. And so I found myself in a horrible relationship. I'm married to an abusive alcoholic. I just found trouble wherever I could, and usually did not have a solution other than just figure out how to deal with it.
Right.
And I had a wake up moment. You know, sometimes people tell you something that you need to hear at the time you need to hear it. And even though you could have heard that 20 times in your life before, until you're open to hearing it, the right words are not going to hit you. And I had a friend who, at my lowest personal point, said something to me, which I might have heard 20 different ways, 20 different times, but when he said it, it hit me.
Right.
And I was complaining to him about my life, and I was complaining about all these bad things and all these bad people. And he said, man, he goes, dude, I am so tired of hearing you complain about life. He said, here's what you do. Everything in your life is a wild animal. Okay. It's a problem. And they're all wild animals. They don't know they're wild animals, but yeah, you go pet it, you go bring it home, you go clean it up, you feed it. And then you go to befriend it, and you reach out and you pet it, and it bites you. And you wonder, why did the wild dog bite me? He goes, the dog doesn't know any better. What you got to do is you got to go figure out, why do you keep finding problems that can't be solved? Why do you keep bringing home wild dogs?
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow. He goes, you're the problem, dude. And I'm like, dang. So I did what you talk about, which is like looking in a mirror and trying to figure it out. And some things I liked and some things I didn't like.
Right. Right.
And I said, all right, well, if you could pick your head up and not just keep your head down to solve problems, but if you could pick your head up and figure out how you interact with the world and live on purpose, let's figure out where your journey is going to take you.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, when I'm seeing this big, long, endless road ahead of me that I could figure out what I'm going to find along the way.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I found out right at that time that my sister was diagnosed with cancer. And it was a little bit, extra, I don't know. It was dichotomous to my situation, but there was an extra kind of urgency to get to know her even more, because we came from the same childhood, but yet she was happy and she was calm in who she was. She had beautiful relationships, great friends. She was living her best life. She was very comfortable with who she was and the way she interacted with the world, what her purpose was. Like, where I was on day one figuring that all out, mm-hmm. she had figured it out.
Oh.
And, and here she is not able to enjoy it because she's got terminal cancer. And that really struck me. So we spent a lot of time together talking about things, and I needed to try to observe and learn as much as I could from her, because I hadn't done any of the things that she had done. Sure. In that regard. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's so powerful. And again, I appreciate your transparency and honesty around that as well. And sounds like she was a remarkable sister as well. And the learning you got from her as well. So I'm going to take you back to when your friend kind of told you were dealing with these wild dogs. You had an option, because there are people who are told that and they still won't change. But you decided to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to pivot and do something about it. What made you, on your darkest moment in that low point, say, hey, you know what? I got to do something about this.
You want to know what the scariest thing is?
Yeah.
The scariest thing ever that I did. And I'm telling you, this is not figuratively. I literally did this. I went home. I had 4-year-old twins. My twins and I were maybe a week away from having left that house. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we were safe. We were good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then I have my friend tell me this, and I go home and I put the kids to bed and I go into the bathroom and I turn the light on and I look in the mirror and I look. Not look like brushing your teeth, thinking about what the day is going to bring. Not look like putting a shirt on. Do I look good to go to work? No, I mean, look.
Yeah.
And I spent like 45 minutes staring at myself, and I started talking to myself. Like, who are you? What are you doing? Like, who are you even?
Mm-hmm.
And who do you want to be? And I had this out loud looking at myself conversation for 45. Dude, try to look in the mirror for more than a few minutes and look deep into your soul and try to figure out who you are. It's a scary, scary thing to do.
Yes.
And so, I don't know. It just, I had never thought in my life that I was the problem.
Yeah.
I had always thought everything else was the problem and I had to figure out how to deal with it or solve it.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought I was the problem.
Mm.
And so when I looked in the mirror and I realized, man, maybe you're the problem. Maybe Chris is right. Maybe you are the problem.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to fix it? You want to solve that? Because you're good at, I learned a lot of lessons in business, man. A lot of lessons in business, right? But I never apparently applied them to myself because sure. I didn't know I was the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So then I went to try to solve the problem. And mm-hmm. and so it was taking this deep, authentic, honest, revealing look at myself that was the turning point for me.
Wow, that's awesome. And kudos to you for really capitalizing that moment and going out and doing something about it. You know, when you reflect back on your sister, what do you think was the greatest thing she taught you?
I think it was honesty and acceptance. And like some people, they go through something like terminal cancer and they're a wreck, and reasonably so.
Right.
You know, it's everything is doom and gloom. Everything is, you know, life's not fair. And they're right. You mm-hmm. know, and you can understand taking that. You know, my sister was very optimistic. She mm-hmm. was, she took it all in stride.
Mm-hmm.
She was very transparent with what was going on without bringing you down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would go, hey, June, how's it going? And then mentally I would beat myself up going, dude, she's dying of brain cancer. You can't ask somebody who's dying of brain cancer how they're doing.
Right.
And she would answer. But then a second later, she go, oh, I'm fine. How, you know, whatever. How you doing? And I'm like, oh man. But I think what I learned from her was being authentic and honest, and it really humbled me. I remember one conversation. Our kids were jumping on a trampoline. They were about the same ages. I had twins. She had kids that were just a couple of years older, and they were jumping on the trampoline. And I got the courage to ask her. I said, when you look out at your kids, you know, and you know what you're going through, like what's going through your head.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked at me and she goes, you know, there's not very much good about this cancer thing. And, you know, I look out at my kids and I realize how grateful I am. And honestly, a lot of people don't get that. Look at what I had. Wow. You know, look what I had. She goes, now look, the worst thing about cancer is I'm not going to see them grow up. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be gone before them. It's going to be hard for them. She goes, but it's like partly I love them to death and I'm grateful. And partly is I feel really terrible. I'm not going to be there for them.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, wow, man. Like she didn't just ball up in tears and go, right, you know, I hate the world and I hate God. And, you know, how could this happen? And you know, nothing. She just was just very humble and very authentic and very, very peaceful with everything. I was really impressed by that.
What a great perspective to have. That is awesome. And I mean, that's amazing that you had a sister who was able to introduce you to that concept. I mean, that's amazing. So I love it. You know, as you look back on a lot of the challenges you face now today, you're an Ironman, you're traveling. I mean, you're in competitions. You've recently ridden a bike, what, 5,000 miles?
5,000 miles.
5,000 miles solo. Yeah. Amazing. How would you say all this stuff that you've kind of gone through has kind of helped shape you and mold you into that person you are today?
You know, it's a great question, and it was it's all framed around an answer I found for myself and who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that answer was really a really stark, vivid point in my life where, you know, we can look back and we could go, okay, I had these aha moments in my life, either aha, things were this bad, or aha, like I was enlightened, or aha, that was a highlight of my life, or whatever, right? We all have these aha moments. And for me, when I started doing endurance athletics, okay, I was an overweight smoker. I mean, when I said, who are you? Who do you want to be? I said, I want to be a non-smoker that's athletic. I couldn't run 2 minutes.
Wow.
Like imagine a 12-minute mile pace I could not handle for 2 minutes.
Wow.
That's a slow jog, less than 2 minutes I could handle. But then I started to get in shape. I started to do some triathlons. I ran a couple 5Ks, 10Ks. And I entered this race, if you could imagine, down in Georgia. I was still at the beginning of this path that I looked to be on. And I found this race and I go, man, this sounds like the wackiest thing ever. I'm going to go do it. It was an 87-mile rollerblade race.
Wow.
In Georgia.
Wow.
So from Athens, Georgia to Atlanta, Georgia on rollerblades.
Wow.
And I said, well, I don't even know how to rollerblade, but what the heck, sounds fun. So I learned how to rollerblade. I do a little bit of training and I get out there and I get to the start and I realize, man, every single person here but me is an athlete. This is not be on the beach and rollerblades and bikinis and
right.
and a bathing suit and rollerblade a little bit. These are athletes getting ready to go 87 miles on rollerblades.
Uh-huh.
What the hell am I doing here? So about 30 miles in, it's in the 80s. It's in the 80s of humidity. I had no idea what the heck is going on with hydration, nutrition, nothing like that. And I get to about mile 30 and it's this big hill I got to climb. And I'm like, that's it. I'm toast. I'm done. And I lean over on my knees and I'm sweating, white sweat because it's so salty.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what that's like, right? It's just totally dehydrated and the salt's coming out of me. And I hit the wall and I'm cramping and I'm just a wreck. And I had this thought, and this was like one of those aha moments. I didn't know it at the time so much, but I know it now for sure. And that I just said, okay, look, dude, you got two options, right? One is you could go home and quit. You could quit and go home and look at what you did. Like you couldn't run 2 minutes, right? And you found your limit. Look at all you learned. Look at everything you learned. Now you go home and you know everything about yourself, which is not such a bad thing, right?
Right.
Like I know what my limit is. I know how far I could go. I know what challenges I could take. I know everything.
Mm-hmm.
I said, boom. Or you could figure out a way to take one more step.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do take one more step, you're going to learn more. You're going to learn something new because you've never been here before. Never been here before. You take one step, you're going to learn something new.
That's right.
So I did. And then another and another and another. And 6.5 hours later, I made it to the finish line.
Wow.
Now I was a wreck. I was an absolute, complete wreck. I got sick as a dog for a couple of days. It was horrible. But I learned like 6.5 hours worth of lessons that I had never learned before. And that became a magnet for me. That became a draw for me is what could I learn? What could I try to take on, whether I succeed or fail at it?
Mm-hmm.
What could I learn? Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, wow, man, like you don't have to learn lessons the hard way in life. You could learn lessons by stretching yourself and by purposefully doing things and by interacting the world in a meaningful way, you could still learn lessons. And I'm like, oh man, this is great. Yeah. I'd much rather take on a problem and figure out what I could learn from it than somebody drop a problem in my lap going, here you go, buddy.
That's
right. So that became a draw for me. And that's what pushes me forward. Every time I do something that's really hard, I think, well, all right, quit and go home, you know, everything, or figure it out, man. Take one more step.
Man, that is absolutely awesome. You know, David, you know, I often tell people, you know, when you run a race, you can be the person who runs and have a straight path to the finish line, or you can be the person who goes through the kind of an Ironman competition course and then get to the finish line. I said, who's going to really do the learning? What do you learn really from just easy, you know? So I love hearing you say that, you know, all the things you learned, and you had a chance to quit, but you kept going though.
Yeah. And sometimes you have to quit, but then you learn, learn there, you learn. Sometimes you have to quit, but what was really amazing about endurance athletics is that nobody pays you. Right. I mean, it's kind of like collegiate athletes, you know, most of them, maybe not all of them, most 99% of them are not getting paid.
Right.
They're doing it because they love it. They're doing it because it's what they want to do. And in fact, most athletes, nobody's looking. Nobody knows their name.
Sure.
Nobody knows what they do. And that's a really beautiful thing because you get to do it for yourself. And I learned about endurance athletics that nobody cares where I'm at in the Ironman standings. Right. Nobody's watching. Nobody cares. Nobody's saying, oh, look at that. Look at that Dave Richmond go. They could care less. Right. Which is awesome because then I know I'm doing it just for me.
That's right.
And that's a really neat thing, because if you're doing it for you, then you go, okay, I'm going to be as present as possible, because it's only about the guy in the mirror. It's not about anybody else. And so it's a different type of driver. You know, when we're at work, or we're in the classroom trying to impress the teacher, or we're at work trying to impress the boss or the employees, or we're at a sales call trying to impress the potential client, it's a totally different mindset.
Absolutely.
Than when you're doing something 100% for you, because nobody else cares and nobody else is watching.
Yeah.
And so I try to take advantage of that all the time, because that's where I learned the most about myself.
That is awesome. What a great lesson. I love it. So Dave, last question here. We're coming off a couple of years, I mean, where things have been very, very tough for a lot of our listeners. People have lost finances, lost jobs, lost loved ones, and even lost hope in some situations. For those folks who are out there listening and wondering if a brighter day is going to come, what would you tell those folks out there listening?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's kind of a tough one to answer. You know, I think there's not a single person alive that has any self-awareness.
Uh-huh.
That is not thinking, man, this is rough. It was isolating.
Yeah.
It was not fair. Now I'm not saying everybody has self-awareness. So some people don't have some people live in denial. Some people don't have self-awareness, but for anybody that has any self-awareness, I think you could take comfort in this one thought. Uh-huh. When in your lifetime has so many people had something in common?
Yeah.
As a touch point.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I'm not saying everybody's self-aware, but for people that are self-aware and are grounded and realize the truth of what happened, at least is we all have that in common.
Yes. Like,
isn't it nice to know that you're not alone? Like everybody's dealing with something, everyone. Yeah. And so that's a really comfortable thought. And so I say that, that I would not look at comparing yourself to other people, because you can't live their life and they can't live your life. But just realize that, you know, you're not the only one that's struggling or that has struggled, and then just get in front of the mirror and figure it out. Like who are you and what do you need to do? And at least I really like the fact when I'm doing an Ironman or I'm doing a 50-mile run, I like it. I like being out there alone sometimes, but I really like the idea when I look around and I look at the fear in other people's eyes and I look at like the apprehension and I go, okay, cool. I'm not the only one, right?
Absolutely. Right?
We're all here together. Uh-huh. So I would just say, look, guaranteed, there are people out there that are going through the same things you're going through. And just take a little bit of comfort in that. And then just figure out what's the first step you need to take. What's that first like 2-minute run that you need to do? Cause you'll find some answers if you're taking that approach, I think.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, great advice. David Richmond, folks, I hope you guys have been inspired by his story. Again, David, if people want to follow you, what's the best way to follow you and connect with you?
Connect with me. Just go to cycleoflives.org. You can get my books, learn about speaking and, my workshops and all the other good stuff we're doing.
That's awesome. So David, we had some fun. You ready? We had the tough talk. Are you ready to have a little fun now?
Let's do it.
Okay. This part of our section here is called the rapid fire purpose questions. I want you to give me and the audience, your most concise answer to each of these questions.
Go.
You ready? All right, here we go. David, what gives your life meaning?
Seeing tomorrow from today. So optimism and seeing what I could get out of the world that gives me meaning.
I love it. What one word best describes you?
Resiliency.
Yeah, this is why you're on the show. Absolutely. What problem do you want to solve in our world?
Why the hell are so many people angry and mean? Mm. It makes no sense to me. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense to me. If we can solve a problem, I'm just like, I know it sounds stupid, but why the hell can't we all get along?
Yeah, that's a good one. I love it. What was your favorite thing to do as a kid?
Wow, that's a great question. My favorite thing to do as a kid was just if I could be in the water.
Okay.
Swimming pool, a river, a lake, it didn't matter. If I could just be in water, the ocean, I love water.
I love it. What do you wish you had more time to do?
Cook, write, run, work. I wish I had more time to do everything, man.
All the important stuff. Absolutely. What does your 15-year-old self imagine you'd be doing right now?
I actually thought I was going to be a aerospace engineer.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Man, which would have taken a whole lot of degrees. And here I am with not even one.
That's awesome. But you have the mindset to do it. I love it. I love it. Who inspires you the most?
Currently?
In general, who inspires you most?
You know, I gotta say it's my wife. I've been married for a number of years to a really beautiful, driven, awesome, fantastic woman, and she definitely inspires me every day.
Awesome, I love it. What's her name, by the way?
Erin.
Erin, shout out to Erin. So when she hears this broadcast, she's gonna really be very inspired by that. I love it. What's something about yourself we might be surprised to learn about you?
Something about myself to be surprised to learn about. I do mosaic artwork.
Really?
That's
okay.
That's a way for me to meditate is to do, I do mosaic artwork with mosaic tile.
I love it. I love it. What is on your bucket list to do within the next year?
Go visit Portugal.
Okay, good. What's something you'll spend your time doing no matter what?
I think it's staying in shape because I know it keeps me younger and healthier, and which will make me live longer and have more time. So I always, no matter what, got to do that.
I love it. What do you want your grandchildren to say about you someday?
That I still am young enough to run around with them.
I love it. That's a great answer. They'll love that as well. If you were a superhero, what would your superpower be?
I should know the answers to some of these questions. I think my superpower would be to be invisible. I feel like if you could just go in and rearrange things without anybody noticing, wow, that wouldn't be awesome, because you could fix a situation, you could whisper something in somebody's ear. Like, I feel like that could help me solve the world's problem about being nicer.
I love it. I love it. I think a lot of people love that as well. What sparks your creativity?
You know what? It's being in a dark, quiet place. Uh-huh. And being able to just let whatever's going to come in. And for me, that sparks creativity for me.
Good. If you became president today, what law would you pass first?
What law would I pass first? Anti being mean, anti hate law. I don't even know how to frame that, dude. My wife's a lawyer. She would laugh at me right now.
You know what? You get a lot of votes just for that idea there.
How would you even frame that, man? I don't even know how you go about that, but it seems so obvious to me. Just be nice. Yeah, that's my law. Just be nice. If you're not, then you're done.
Absolutely. I love it. If you could follow someone around for a day, who would it be and why?
You know, I think I would probably follow around Oprah Winfrey. I think that's who I'd follow around, because like, she's such an enigma. Like, how in the world does she do what she does? How has she been so successful? Is her mindset? Does she rampage people? Does she empower them? Like, what's the truth? Right. I'd like to find out, because if somebody has maximized time on earth in our lifetimes, in our generation, I say she's got to be in the top 100, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good choice there. What's been the best gift someone's ever given you?
It's Chris, my buddy Chris. Okay. He gave me the awareness to say, man, you're the problem. Go solve that one. Shout out. That was the best gift.
I love it. I love it. What's been the one thing you have never been afraid to do?
I'm not afraid to do anything. So I would say it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Like, if I choose to do it, I got no fear. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I don't really have fear about stuff.
That's great mindset. Yeah. What moment from your childhood are you most proud of?
From my childhood, most proud of. That's one I never even ever thought of. I don't know if I have an answer for that. You know what? I don't think anything comes to mind.
Okay, that's a good one.
I was a good kid. I'm not saying I was a bad kid. Yeah. I'm sure I got plenty to be proud of, but proud. I'm going to have to think about that one and come back to you another time on that one.
Absolutely. You'll keep that open there. What does success look like for you?
You know, it's a trite answer, but I think if you get to a point in your life where it makes sense, I think success is doing what you love, what you're good at, and what you could make enough of a living from to be able to give back. So not make money to live, but make enough money to give back. So what are you good at? What do you love? And what do you make enough money at so you can give back?
I love it.
That would be success.
What are you most grateful for?
I'd say it's a sense of awareness. I'm most grateful that I really feel like I understand the idea of living on purpose, where I don't think I did for most of my life. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm very grateful for that.
I love it. What's been the biggest lesson you have learned in life?
It was through this last project, through the Psycho Lies project. I knew this and I heard it a million times, but I didn't know the true depth of it. And I think the biggest lesson I learned in my life is everybody's going through something that we have no idea. And everybody's been through stuff we have no idea.
Yes.
And it's a very humbling, optimistic, just stark truth behind that. Like, you have no idea what people have gone through or what they're going through. Yeah. And it's a lesson I try to carry with me all day, every day.
That's awesome. What a great lesson. Last but not least, David, how do you want to be remembered in history?
As a guy that could do whatever he set out to do. There awesome. You go.
Awesome. David, give yourself a round of applause. You survived, my man. Great job. Great job.
Nice.
Hey, folks, I hope you guys have been inspired by David Richmond's story, man. He's a great guy. You got to get him on where you're speaking, podcast, whatever you got going on, you got to make sure you tap his wisdom and insights to get him on and to share with your audience out there as well. So David, last final question. Our podcast centers on two things, resiliency and purpose. What last words can you leave our audience with around resiliency and purpose?
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about it all the way. And, you know, I really believe that if you do things on purpose, like if you have a reason to do them, and it's your reason, like you're really truthfully doing it on purpose, then there isn't anything that can stop you. Now, every once in a while, you're going to have a wall that you can't climb over. Every once in a while, you're going to have a mountain you can't go around, right? I mean, that just happens, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing things on purpose, like truly on purpose, like you're present in the moment of why you're doing what you're doing, I mean, the resiliency factor goes up by 100.
Yes.
You know, it just does. And, you know, if somebody said to me right now, here, I'll give you $1 million to do X, and I really hated to do X, mm-hmm. I might do it, but I wouldn't be very committed to it.
Right.
But if somebody said, hey, I'll give you another year of life, or somebody said, hey, I'll give you the opportunity to have 100,000 people now being the nicest people in the world, I'd be like, don't stop me, man. There's no possible way. So I think if you find out what your purpose is and you do things on purpose, I just say your resiliency goes up 100 times for sure.
Awesome. What a great response. Folks, I hope you guys have been motivated by David Richmond's story. If you are someone out there, you're an overcomer, we want to hear from you. We want you to go to our website, tawatson.com, share your story with us. Subscribe to our podcast, Resilient Stories. Download this episode, rate it, share it with your folks on social media. And again, everyone, we want to thank you guys for tuning in today. God bless, peace, and deuces, everyone.